Okay, tonight Solomon gives advice about love life. He seems to be a strange one to give it, but he's a younger man when he does this and has his troubles when he's older. We're in Proverbs chapter 5, so I want you to open your Bibles. Proverbs chapter 5. Now, maybe it would be good, since we have missed a few times on the book of Proverbs, if we simply give a quick overview of what this book is like. Proverbs has about, if you count the introduction, which tells you the purpose, it has five sections. In the first seven verses, chapter 1 through 1, 1 through 7, you have an introduction with the purpose, or with the purposes of the book. And he claims that he's going to share some divine viewpoint in this book which will stabilize the young man. Okay? Now, the next section runs from the 8th verse of chapter 1 all the way through chapter 9. Okay. Now, you don't have any proverbs, hardly, in that section. What you have is a series of discourses. As from a father to son. Okay? And you have a few proverbs that you might be able to find. What is a proverb? What's a proverb? Anybody? What's a proverb? Everybody awake? What's a proverb? A saying, okay. Oh, it's sort of a wise saying. A sharp saying, a short saying. Something true, a maxim, Okay. So, really, what you have here is a series of discourses as from a father to a son. Now, you have 11 times the expression in there. My son, or my children, or children. My children, listen to me. Listen to me. I'm going to tell you something, see? Now, if you look up all of these, you have this 11 times. Okay? Okay, the Proverbs actually start in chapter 10. And chapter 10 through 24 are the Proverbs of Solomon. And chapter 25 through, make sure I get this right, 29. Are also Proverbs of Solomon, only they have been collected by Hezekiah, who is a later king. And then in the last two chapters, you have Proverbs by two other people. One man's name is King Lemuel, and we do not know who he is, and the other is a man named Agur. Okay? Sayings by Agur and King Lemuel. And King Lemuel concentrates in the last chapter on what a virtuous woman is. Okay, so we said when we started this, we were going to look hard at this first big section that runs from the first chapter through the 9th chapter. And we have seen in the early chapters that there is a progression of thought in chapters 1 through 9. This series of discourses in which a father is giving advice to a son. And in the early sections, he talks about the child at home. Okay, now what is he emphasizing in the early chapters of the child at home? What's he saying for the boy to do, or the girl? What, Amy? Okay, he's talking about the mother-father relationship, see? Mother, or parental relationship, okay? Okay. Now he throws in a few other things, but that's a major emphasis. Then the progress, since you don't stay a child always, he talks about the youth among friends. Young person is growing up, and he begins to develop the idea about what it is to choose a friend, how other friends are going to influence you, and so on. Okay, then he moves on in this progression of thought to young manhood. Young manhood away from home. Okay, now, it's within this context, this problem of young manhood away from home, that in chapters 5 through 7, he talks about your love life. And that's where we are tonight. Got it? Okay. Now, okay, let's just start with it. Chapter 5, verse 1. My son, attend to my wisdom and bow your ear to my understanding. You subserviate your listening to what I know about what I'm talking about, that you may regard discretion, and that your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. In other words, the strange woman that he is talking about is a flatterer, and she happens to turn out in this book to be the villain. She is a seducer, a seductive person. So in order to understand what he's talking about, we have to sort of define the strange woman. Okay? Focus. Okay. So this is chapter 5 and verse 3. And this is the second time that we've had strange woman in the book. He's mentioned it once before, but he hasn't dwelt on it. Now he's going to dwell on what type of person this strange woman is. Okay, now this name is used in 2:16, in 5:3, and in 6:24, and in 7 and verse 5. Okay, let's look at chapter 2, verse 16, because that's the first use of it in the book. We'll have to start with verse 11. Discretion shall preserve thee, if you apply yourself to the kind of wisdom that Solomon is talking about, divine viewpoint. Understanding shall keep you, chapter 2, verse 11, to deliver you from the evil man, from the man who speaks froward things, and so on. Now, verse 16. To deliver you from the strange woman, even from the stranger, which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth, and forgetteth the covenant of her God. Now, the word that is used here is Zara'ish. Woman, of course, would be Ish or Isha. Isha. And strange would be Tzara. Looks like this. Whoop, should have put the English up there, I'm sorry. Z-A-R-A-H. Now, one of the things that if you read a commentator on this, that confuses the issue, along with Solomon's experience, is the next word. To deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger. See that? This would be strange woman in 2:16, and then even from the stranger. Now, this word for stranger here is a different word. It's the word nakhria. It's like this, N-A-K-H-R-I-Y-Y-A-H, nakhria. Now, nakhria means unknown or foreign. A stranger. See? A foreigner. Right? Right. Now, was a Jewish Israelite who was assumed to be a believer, was he under Mosaic law forbidden to intermarry with foreigners? Is that true? Is it? Was he? Of course, sure. He was forbidden to intermarry with foreigners because they would be almost unquestionably would be unbelievers. So that he was to opt for a bride, somebody within the confines of the covenant. But I'm questioning whether this passage is talking about a foreigner, because it says in verse 17, which forsaketh the guide of her youth. The word guide there would be companion, or her the husband of her youth. Now, and then it says, the one who forgets the covenant of her God. Now, that would have to make the woman what? Or what about the covenant business? What's that mean? A what? An Israelite, because she'd be somebody under the covenant, right? In other words, when he talks about this stranger, he says that she might be one who forsakes two things: the husband of her youth, and the covenant of God. Okay. Now, this would mean that she'd have to be under the covenant. Right. So this kind of identifies her as somebody who is loose morally in Israel. Right? She leaves her first husband or the husband of her youth. She forgets the covenant relationship with God. And she becomes somebody who is loose morally. Now, if you read a commentary, they'll talk about foreigners. But it doesn't matter. See, whenever the word strange woman is used, it means a wanton woman. And that word might not mean too much to you. It would mean one who is morally loose. Morally loose. Very, very loose. Okay? Any other adjectives we could use? Adulterous? Okay, adulterous is the idea. Adulterous. Because she leaves the husband of her youth, okay? She's adulterous type. Apt to be caught in adulterous. Lascivious would be another word. Some of these words I know you're not... All these words are sort of synonyms. Okay. All right, let's go back then to chapter 5. Okay, so he is warning about identifying with this type of a strange woman. Okay? All right, chapter 5, verse 3. What kind of woman is this? The lips of an adulterous type drop as honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, flattering, seductive. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. In other words, the road she's on is the road of death. Her steps take hold in, King James says, hell. It literally means Sheol, or the place of departed spirits, the place, remember, Sheol was divided before Christ arose from the dead into a place of torments and into the place of bliss. Okay, there was a great gap in between. And this would be torments over here, and this would be a place of bliss. Now, this is where the feet of the adulterous woman. It's her legs, and it's her feet. She finds her feet, her paths, take hold in heels. Now, you listen to me, verse 6, lest you should ponder the path of life. Her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. In other words, this is a devious path that these people are on. Hear me now, therefore, O you children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way from her. Stay away from her. Come not nigh the door of her house, lest you give your honor unto others, and you give your years unto the cruel ones, lest strangers be filled with your wealth. Verse 10. Now, the word wealth there is the word huh. And what it means is your strength, your toils, hence the fruit of your toil. And the word picture there is that this young man in the prime of his life gets mixed up with a seductive, whorish type woman, and he finds all the strength of his labors and so on being eaten up by her. So he says, lest strangers be filled with your fruit of your toils, and your labors be in the house of a stranger, and you mourn at the last when your flesh and your body are consumed. In other words, the end of that libertine way of life was really you are dissipated. And your dissipation, all your efforts and so on, has gone to support a prostitute who in turn has others living off you, her pimps and so on. Okay? Verse 12. And then you say, after all this happens, how have I hated instruction, and how my heart despised reproof, and I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor did I incline my ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and the assembly. Now, what he's saying there is, this young man has been properly instructed, and he is still involved in the way of the Lord in the temple. And in the midst of the very assembly, he finds himself overwhelmed with the guilt that he has because of this association with an adulterous woman. So, up until that point, see, the picture's all negative. Now, in verse 15, Solomon now gives very, very strong, positive advice. See, he changes. What you have in verses 1 through 10 is warnings against profligate living. Now, he switches in verse 11 he comes back to this in verse 21, but let's just include the rest of them. He switches now to a more positive theme.
And he gives advice to concentrate your love on your young wife. Verse 11. Oh, pardon me, that's not verse 11, that's verse 15. This should run through 14, and this should begin at verse 15. Okay. Verse 15. Now we have the positive advice. Verse 15 says in King James, "Drink waters out of thine own cistern." Drink water out of your own cistern. Now let's just first figure out what the literal meaning of that is. What would the literal meaning of that be? What does it mean to drink waters out of your own cistern? Do you have a cistern? Do you have a brethren? What's he mean when he says drink waters out of your own cistern? Okay, drink waters out of your own well, which would mean, negatively it would mean, don't go to your neighbors and drink out of their well. Right, that's the negative. Positive, drink water out of your own cistern. And running waters out of thine own well. Now, what does that mean spiritually, or in terms of your love life? What do you mean by fool around? What about fooling around at home? Okay, that's what he's saying. Yeah. What he's saying is that seek your love satisfaction with your own wife. Yeah? So that's what he says in verse 15. Seek love's satisfaction at home with your own wife. Now, the profligate, or the wanton person, always feels that he or she is missing something sexually. So, even though this person may have sexual relations at home, they always feel maybe there's a little bit more to this, and so they're always looking around. One of the big problems that the sex explosion that we now live in has created is that in married couples in my age category, they've all been reading this junk, see, junk literature, the sensual woman, the sensuous man, and they read that and they say, hey, that never happened to me, I must be missing out. And it's causing havoc in marriages, in, you know, people over 35, and many of them have been running for counseling to counselors, to psychiatrists, etc., etc., when really many of them have a very healthy sexual life. But they read all this junk stuff and they get all up in the ear, you know, about maybe the fact that they missed something. Well, This is sort of the mentality of the wanton profligate. They're always afraid that they miss something, hence they never do find full satisfaction in a marital partner. So they have to sort of feel like they have to play the field. In other words, their soul has become so damaged by wantonness that they cannot receive and give love in a healthy way. So this advice is saying, seek your love satisfaction alone with your own wife. Verse 16, let thy fountains be dispersed abroad. Now 16's not too good. Let's have another translation. Anybody read what you have in verse 16? Tell us first what you're reading from. What translation? Yes, would you read? What are you reading from? What Living Bible?
That says, why should you beget children if you have a good?
Okay, that's good. What? Anybody else have anything? Amy, what do you got? New American?
Yes. Your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets.
Okay, streams of water in the streets. Here's another translation. This is mine. Should your offspring be dispersed abroad? Oh, no, this is amplified. This is not mine. This is amplified. Should your offspring be dispersed abroad as water brooks in the streets? And the answer to that, of course, is no. The idea there is that you're profligate and you have children all over the place. You know, you're a GI and you went to Korea, so you have a kid there. You went to Vietnam, you have a kid there. You're out in San Francisco for a while, and you have a kid there. See? Well, I'd say that shouldn't be. Verse 17, let them, meaning let your children, be yours only, and not supplied, not children of strangers with you. So verse 16 and 17 is saying, confine yourself to your own children and your wife. Confine yourself to your wife and your own children. Okay. Verse 18. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Now, that is the fountain, of course, of human life. That is conjugal fidelity. That is the marital relationship in a nutshell in verse 8. And for that to be what God wants it to be, then it has to be faithful to one another. So verse 18 is saying, be faithful to one another in marriage. That your offspring be blessed. Because, now, this is not the only reason this verse is here, but your children will learn about love and male-female relations from you. If you learn your attitudes, by watching your parents. Now, I want to give you a warning. If you want to find out the type of guy that you're going with, you watch how he treats his mother, because that's how he's going to treat you. Now, he may not be treating you that way now, but if he marries you or he spends any amount of time with you, he is going to treat you like he treats his mother. If he is disrespectful, if he is antagonistic to his mother, if he is always shooting his mouth off to his mother, that's how he's going to treat you. And you men, you watch the relationship of a girl with her father. If it is unhealthy, then she is going to take hang-ups with her into marriage, because she has learned and she has responded to the male-female relationship like her mother often responds to her husband. And if her mother is responding wrong, then she will probably respond. Or maybe she has some problems with her father. Now, if you have a healthy faithfulness and identity with two parents that's healthy, doesn't mean they're not going to fight occasionally, but if it's healthy, then you are going to tend to want that kind of relationship. You're going to look for it. Now, if it's unhealthy and you can see it, the problem is seeing it and the issues involved. The problem is really not even just seeing the relationship, it's the issues behind it. Then you may not be bothered by some of those issues. But by and large, We learn the male-female relationship, at least initially, from our parents, and it runs pretty deep. Sometimes we get hurt that way, and it takes years to correct it. Where there is not a faithful relationship, I'm now talking about conjugal fidelity. And that means sexual relations. And you learn of that. Then your concept of the meaning of marriage will be hindered. Okay, verse 19. Solomon continues his advice about love life. Let her, meaning let the wife of your youth, be as the loving hind and the pleasant roe. What's that mean? Hind and roe. Anybody have a different translation? Just Amy and this young man? Dove?
Doe.
Doe, okay. D-O-E, all right. What's New American?
A loving hind and a graceful.
Okay. Might be a gazelle and a doe. It is really a gazelle. Same word we had in the Ag study last week. And the idea there in the hind and the gazelle in verse 19 is mainly the liveliness of and the gracefulness of these animals when they move, and particularly their eyes. So the idea is graceful, lively, attractive, gentle. Okay. Let her be as the loving doe and the pleasant gazelle. Let her breasts satisfy thee at all times. And be thou ravished always with her love. Now, the word ravished there is a very, very strong word. Now, it's going to be used three times. This is verse 19. Ravished. This is the word wagah. Wagah. And wagah means ecstatic. Well, we spell it E-C, don't we? Ecstatic. E-C, S-T-A-C-I-C. Ecstatic or intoxicating joy. Okay, so what he says, let her breasts satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ecstatically joyful, delighted always with her love. You focus on that, see. Now he's going to use this, there's a threefold use of this word, wagah. He's going to use it again in verse 20. Why wilt thou, my son, be ravished? Same word, verse 20. Why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman? And why do you embrace the bosom of a strange woman? So here what he is saying here is, when this occurs with a strange woman, you have a similar type physical intoxication, but it's not exactly the same. This, with a strange woman, Solomon is saying, is a foolish delirium. The foolish delirium of a profligate. Now, he isn't saying, that sexual intercourse and sexual relations isn't any fun. It is fun. It's pleasant. See, a lot of young Christian kids, you know, they go to church and they hear sermons, you know, they hear messages and say, you know, God doesn't want you to have sexual relations so until you're married. And they get the idea, you know, boy, that must really be bad. And then, you know, they get about 15 or 16 and they start playing around and they have sexual relations and they have tremendous guilt feeling over it. But, you know, they wake up the next morning and God hasn't struck them. He didn't strike them dead. They're not dead the next day. And they say, hey, nothing really happened to me. Hey. And from there, they begin to rationalize himself right into repeated sexual relationships. They start a ball rolling that they can't stop. And when you, as a young person, begin to get physically dependent upon each other and emotionally dependent, well, they go together. The physical, emotional go together. And once that starts, when you carry that to its logical conclusion, you are not going to stop it. You started to play with a fire that you can't put out. So he's not saying to the son, no, you're not going to have any fun when you have sexual relations with a strange woman. Oh, yes, you will. But it's not going to bring to you what you thought it would. Verse 21. For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and God pondereth all this person's going. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself. In other words, the iniquities of the profligate shall take him himself. And he shall be holden with the cords of his sin. He will be trapped in that sin and bound by it, hand and foot. And he couldn't escape it if he wanted to. And the point is that no one can conceal adultery or fornication from God. And God says, okay, that's what you wanted? Run your course. And inevitably, that's what happens. You run your course. Verse 23, he shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly shall he go astray. So, by the way, the word folly in verse 23 is this word, waga. So waga, which is ecstatic joy with your wife in verse 19, which is good, becomes folly in verse 21. Yeah? The consequence of unchastity. So, in other words, what God is saying in the passage is, God is saying, look, young people, listen to me. I designed sex. I made your physical body like it was, like it is. I made the breasts of a woman so a man would enjoy her breasts. I did that. God is saying, I designed this whole thing of sex. But I also designed the limits of it. Now, when you go beyond my limits out here, then this is not going to bring to you what I designed it to bring to you. In fact, it'll bring just the opposite. It is designed to bring you great release of tension, great personal identity with one member of the opposite sex. It is designed to bring procreation to the human race, offspring. It's designed for pleasure. It's designed as a supreme manifestation of love. All of these are by divine design. And God says, this is all my plan in sex. But you overreach my plan, you go outside my plan, and it just does just the opposite. Instead of having what I designed it to be, you find yourself in turmoil. Okay? Now that's one of the things that we see in the sex explosion around about us. Now there has to be, like in California, I don't know how much in Denver, I guess Denver too. Now we have the problem of, sex orgies, where married couples and get together, several married couples, and have sex orgies and so on. And where does it go from there, see? Well, that's what happens when you move beyond the bonds that God has designed in sex. Okay, let's summarize this I want to take what he says in the other chapters. Look at chapter 6. He mentions the same idea in chapter 6, verse 24. Again, he's talking about divine wisdom and the commandments that he gives to his son. And he says, these commandments, verse 24, will keep you from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in your heart, neither let her take you with her eyelids, with the mascara and the eyeshadow and the false eyelashes and the twittering eyelashes. Oh, I like you. You sure are sharp. Don't let her take you with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. Now, what's that mean? Pardon? No, it means he comes down to his last morsel. Because a whorish woman, see, she's always demanding. Never giving, always demanding. Oh, she gives of her body, but that's only to get. See? The purpose of love is not to get, but to give. So this whorish woman is always demanding, and he brings this person to his last morsel. The idea is it brings him to utter poverty. The adulteress will hunt for the precious or the costly life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes be not burned? In other words, can you drop a hot coal down your shirt without burning your belly? No. Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? No. So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, cohabitates with his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her shall not be innocent, brings misery. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he is found, he shall restore sevenfold. Now what's going to happen if you commit adultery with your neighbor's wife? Verse 32. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacks understanding, and he that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. And of course, we've been through that, haven't we? We went through that when we talked about the Song of Solomon. That this person who becomes whorish in his attitude, see, this is male or female, who becomes whorish in his attitudes, here's in his soul, he begins to darken the lobes of his soul, self-consciousness, mentality, volition, emotions, senses, conscience. And all of these are lobes. And your soul is like a breathing mechanism. It's sucking in and it's breathing out. Now, when it says he destroys his soul by committing adultery, he begins to darken the lobes of his soul. And what that means is simply that sin destroys the capacity to see life, to enjoy life. Because your soul is the medium by which you enjoy life. The larger, the greater your soul, the more you enjoy life and interaction with other life forms. But the person that does this has put darkness into his soul. He begins to clot up the breathing mechanism of his soul. He's polluted in his soul. He has ecological disaster inside of him. Now, that's true of any whorish type person. So, look, you don't, if you're healthy at all, you don't need Playboy and, Eros. You don't need those magazines. You're out of your tree if you buy in those things. All they're going to do is make you more whorish in your attitudes. If you've got any hormones at all, you don't need to look at that stuff. But that's what that appeals to. That appeals to that type of mind, that frame of reference, see? And it aggravates the situation. Well, this verse says, he that commits adultery, this person doesn't understand divine viewpoint, and he actually destroys his own soul. Now, when the person that's doing that, though, he thinks he's fulfilling his soul. See? Isn't that a switch? It's a tragedy. But it happens all the time. In the 7th chapter, the 5th verse, through the rest of the chapter, Solomon is watching. He's looking out the window. And he sees this young man go down the street corner. And out comes this profligate woman. She just about attacks him on the street, kisses him, so on, says nice things to him, tells him about the nice bed she has. It's all decked out with perfume and flowers. And, won't you come to bed with me? And so he yields to it. So in verse 21 of chapter 7, it says, with her much fair speech she caused him to yield. With the flattery of her lips she forced him. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver. I don't know if that means he gets gonorrhea or not. Maybe he does. As a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, there before ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. This is the strange woman of verse 5. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. Okay, now in those chapters, the villain is the strange, whorish woman. But the advice, of course, is for both sexes, whorish type men, so on. Any questions about what I'm saying? Let's summarize it quickly, okay? These are divine warnings about sexual looseness. Divine warnings about sexual looseness from Proverbs 5, 6, and 7. Number one, the sexually loose life begins first with rejection of divine viewpoint in other areas. In other words, here is a believer who's walking in fellowship, a young man, and all of a sudden he finds himself taken up with somebody sexually loose. Well, it didn't just happen like that. There's some other... He's having problems with his parents, he's rejecting his parents' advice, or he's rejecting biblical advice, or something. This is chapter 2, verse 1 through 11, chapter 6, verse 20 through 24. All right, point 2. Sexual indiscretion becomes a terrible taskmaster. Sexual indiscretion becomes a terrible taskmaster. You are the slave. Okay. Chapter 5, verse 3 through 14 and 22. 22 says, this person shall be taken by his own iniquities, and he shall be holden, bound up by the cords of his sins. Chapter 6, verse 26, which says, for by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress keeps on hunting the costly type life. Point three. Sexual looseness destroys the capacity of the soul to give and receive love maximally. And that's the way God designed it. He designed the love relationship. He designed a love relationship for you to find your right man or your right woman and marry that person and love them forever. And you will have more sexual enjoyment that way than if you join all the bunny clubs in the United States and make them your habitat and you follow all their attitudes. You will have more fulfillment maximally by finding your right man or right woman and then learning sex with them in marriage. Proverbs 6:32, he that committeth adultery with a woman does not have understanding, lacks divine viewpoint, and destroys his own soul. Point four. Sexual looseness brings the downfall of many good people. Chapter 5, verse 21 through 23. Chapter 7, verse 24 through 27. I just heard today that a friend of mine who was a pastor, and I knew he had left the pastorate, but I was terribly disturbed to find out that he left the pastorate to divorce his wife and to run off with somebody. He had four children. Real fine man. I'm not here telling stories or something about him. It bothers me to even have to say it, but it could happen to anybody. And I just regretted that I heard that story today that it happened to him. Point five. Divine viewpoint always encourages the fulfillment of healthy sexual desires through monogamous marital relationships. Now, I have to say monogamous. It isn't just marital relationship. It's monogamous. It means one wife, one at a time. Proverbs 5, 15 through 19. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Let her be as the loving doe and the pleasant gazelle. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times. Don't be getting involved in the physical anatomy, you know. Oh, yeah, you're 34, 25, 34. Oh, yeah, look at that 37, 23, 34. Let her breast satisfy thee at all time, and be thou ravished always with her love. Monogamous marital relationship. 1 Corinthians 7:19, 7:9. If, well, I better read it. It's encouraging sexual satisfaction in the marital relationship. Listen to the verse. If they cannot contain, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn in the sexual relationship toward one another. Verse, or another verse, Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is honorable among all, and the marriage bed is undefiled. Point six. Solomon, later in life, falls over this very sin. He becomes illustrative of the fact that we all should take heed. Lest we fall. And his fall is recorded in, I wrote the wrong passage down, 1 Kings chapter 11, I think. 1 Kings 11, verses 1 through 8. It always sort of disappoints you, isn't it, when somebody gives you advice and then they fall. That's so disappointing. And it happened to Solomon. But King Solomon loved many strange women. Together with the daughters of Pharaoh, what kind of women were they? What nationality? Egyptians. Women of the Moabites, women of the Ammonites, women of the Edomites, women of the Zidonians and of the Hittites. And of the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not go in unto them, neither shall they come unto you. For surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. What a job he had saying goodnight to all of them. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with Jehovah his God, as was the heart of his father David. Now David committed adultery. The difference between David and Solomon was, well, first of all, it was in the magnitude. I mean, David committed adultery with one woman. David was terribly disturbed over his sin of adultery, and he confessed it. Where Solomon, he just went right on, building up the harem. Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milion, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not go after the Lord as David his father. Then did Solomon build a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem. And he built a high place for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. You know what they did at Molech? They've uncovered an image of Molech, and the archaeologists. And Molech is a big metal god, and hands are out like this. And they have found the bones of babies underneath those arms. And putting together the rites of the heathen fertility cults, Molech was a male god of the ancient fertility cults. The mothers would actually bring their babies and place them in the arms of Molech, and there'd be a fire under there, and the baby would burn to death. They would tie it to the arms, and in the agony of its screams and so on, the mothers would actually have sexual orgasm in front of that statue of Molech. Now, here is Solomon, who represents Jehovah God God, who is morally righteous, getting involved in that kind of thing later on in his life. It's tragic, isn't it? Likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed to their gods. And the end of Solomon is not good, as we've already learned, haven't we? Okay, any questions? No questions, anyway. Okay, let's have a word of prayer. We thank you, our Father, for the revelation which teaches us that you have designed what sexually healthy, what healthy sexual relations really are. We pray that we will not turn our backs on what you have said, but we will take them seriously into our minds and frame of reference, that our lives might be full and pleasing unto you, and that our offspring might be blessed. We pray in Christ's name with thanksgiving. Amen.